So where we are now is the summary of Isaiah's predictions. So we'll probably spend a couple weeks on these, depending how fast this goes. But as I mentioned before, you know, we already went through the first, the first section was kind of the, you know, background of Isaiah and who he was related to and the kings at the time and all that kind of stuff. But the second page was the messianic predictions of Isaiah. And what I want to make sure you understand is this is not a complete list. This is just a list I put together. It's not complete. There are a lot more messianic references that we didn't cover. And the same with these predictions. These are a sampling of the predictions. There's more of them throughout Isaiah. And you can get into all sorts of subtleties where his predictions are not only applying to the current day in Israel and Judah, but are also applying to the end time. And they have a double meaning in that sense. Gibb came in today and mentioned he was reading, he's kind of studying Isaiah as we do it, and he was in chapter 10, verses 1 through 4, and he was saying how much that reminded him of today with the laws and the changes to laws and that kind of thing that it talks about there. And that's an example, I think, of where Isaiah is not only saying something that applied to his day and age, but also has application to the end times. There's a lot of that.
When I read Isaiah, I have problems sometimes because I can't figure out whether it's talking, if he's talking about current times or the end times.
And most times, probably both, but sometimes it's more specific than that. I mean, obviously, when he's talking about Christ coming, he's talking about a future. He's not talking about current events for Israel at that point. But so there are things that are specific to the time of Christ's first advent and the times of his second advent, which is the end times. And there's some stuff that's just specific to Israel. But even the stuff that's specific to Israel back then or to Judah back then kind of as applications for today, because we seem to do the same thing. Even though it doesn't necessarily have a double meaning, it still applies to our lives and in this world today. So there are, I've broken this into two sections in terms of his predictions, those that were fulfilled during his lifetime and those that were fulfilled after Isaiah's lifetime. Now, I want you to understand that, you know, we study this, and maybe you don't really study it, and you don't know the history of Israel and all the historical events, that kind of thing. But I think what we often forget is how long this stuff goes on. Isaiah is talking about Christ's coming, and he lived around 750 to 700 kind of time frame BC. So he's talking 700 to 750 years before he comes. He will talk here in some of this history about the destruction of, or the conquest of not only Israel, but of Judah and the southern tribes by Babylon. And he actually mentions, and this is why people have trouble with it, the latter chapters, he mentions a king of Persia named Cyrus, who's not going to even be alive until like he conquers Babylon in about 520, 530 BC. But he names him by name. He uses the term Cyrus. And so people say, well, that's impossible. That couldn't have happened. So obviously this was written after the fact, because otherwise he wouldn't have known the name Cyrus. And he didn't, but God gave it to him. There's just too much evidence to show that this was all written by Isaiah during Isaiah's time. I just don't believe the critics who say that. And the critics have always been proven wrong when they criticize, what we know to be true in the Bible. During the whole history, really, ever since Christ came, the book of Daniel has been refuted and said that there's no way Daniel, that could have been written by Daniel, because there's just too many predictions that were, so far in the future that what about all the ones that he's predicted that haven't even happened yet, that are for the end times? So that wasn't written after the end time. One of my favorite things about the Bible that I discovered when I was teaching Daniel, people were saying that it had to be written during the time of the Maccabees, which is about 150 BC. okay, as opposed to when it was written, which was between 500 and 600 BC. And the reason for that is it spends a lot of time on that time frame, the time frame of the Maccabees, Daniel does. And so people were saying, well, that was written during that time to encourage the Jews during the time of the Maccabees and when they were under the impression of Antiochus Epiphanes of Syria. And so, you know, they were saying that's had to have been when it was written. Well, it ends up, one of the things they used to prove that was similar to this thing about Isaiah naming Cyrus. Daniel mentions a king in his book, Belshazzar. And Belshazzar, there's no record of Belshazzar in history. None. All right? And it talks about Belshazzar taking over the Medo-Persian Empire. What ends up, and so they said, see, that king never even existed. This made up. And so this wasn't written by Daniel, because anyone who lived during Daniel's time would know who the real kings were, right? So this had to have been written after the fact, someone who didn't know history, and just they made up this name. And so that's what they said. Well, during the excavation, the archaeological digs in Babylon, they came across a plaque. And lo and behold, it had Belshazzar's name on it as the king. Now, that plaque could only have existed during the time that Belshazzar reigned. Okay? So, what that means is, now you've really got, those critics are really caught in a corner. Because not only did they say this guy didn't exist, therefore it couldn't have been written, now they've got proof that not only did he exist, but there was no record of him existing for hundreds of years. So no one who wrote afterwards would have had any clue there was a Belshazzar. So the only person who could have written that is someone who lived during that time. And so their own argument turned on them. And it proved that Daniel had to have been written when Daniel's there. Now, since then, they've uncovered a lot about Belshazzar, or relatively a lot. But that hasn't been until the 1900s. So between, you know, 500 BC and 1900 AD, there was no record of Belshazzar. And now we know why. Belshazzar wasn't actually the king. He was the son of the king. And the Medo-Persian Empire had become so big that his father wanted to rule from the traditional Persian area, not from Babylon. And so he put his son as kind of a prefect to rule in Babylon. We now know that through some writings we've found since then. So here's a man who no one could have. There's only two time frames that someone could have known about Belshazzar. Either you lived when Belshazzar was there. Oh, because what they did is the kingdom that then conquered them destroyed everything. They destroyed all the history, destroyed everything about Belshazzar, and that's why no one knew about him. They purposely rewrote history, if you will. Okay, so the only people who could have known about Belshazzar were people who lived when he lived, or people who lived after 1900, 1920, when they discovered this stuff. Okay, well, we know Daniel wasn't written in either of those times. It wasn't written after 1900. We know we had copies way before that. So again, and I think it's the same thing with Cyrus here. You know, God revealed to Isaiah that this king would be named Cyrus and that it would happen. There's just too many things that are so convincing that it was written during Isaiah's time that to use the idea that he named Cyrus as the reason it couldn't have been is to basically not have faith in a God who can reveal those things and knows the future. Yeah.
Your It is similar thing to Cyrus. I read in Isaiah recently the reference to Christ coming as coming from the stump of Jesse. Mm-hmm. And I had to think, gosh, Jesse didn't even exist then. I didn't know the lineage of Christ.
Yeah.
And so even before there was an indication of who Jesse was, they were referring to Christ being.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Isaiah wrote long after David and Jesse. So Isaiah would have known that because, you know, Jesse was David's father, and that's what it's referring to. You know, he lived around 1000 B.C., and Isaiah lived at 750 B.C. So, Isaiah was long after. Yeah. And that's what, thank you, that reminds me of what I was went on this tangent for. So here we have a bunch of history. We're going to go through it. And Israel, the northern tribes, are conquered by Assyria. Now, don't confuse Syria and Assyria. They're two different countries, and both of them play a part here. Assyria and Syria, or Assyria ends up conquering the northern tribes in 722 BC. Okay? Now, the southern tribes, Judah, they weren't conquered until they were conquered by Babylon around 600 BC. Okay, Nebuchadnezzar actually came and put a siege on Jerusalem three times, 605, 597, and 586, almost each 10 years apart. And that was during the time of Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. So between the fall of Israel, 722, which is when Isaiah's living, okay, Isaiah's living during this time, and the fall of the southern tribes, you're talking, you know, 150 years. Or 120 years at least, okay? And then Isaiah talks about the restoration of the kingdom and Judah returning from Babylon, and that doesn't happen till Cyrus, who issues a decree to do that, to allow the Jews to return, and Cyrus, who was a Persian king who had conquered Babylon, made this edict, and Isaiah tells us that. And that's in 539, 538 BC. So think of that in terms of the United States. All right. The northern tribes fall in 722. It's 125 years later when, you know, the southern tribe falls. So that means it's the same as the northern tribes falling in 1900. Not in the 1900s, in the year 1900. And we're going to fall today in 2025. Okay? That's how long between those two events were. I think we often think of them as happening fairly quickly. Right? And then, you know, the return is another 70 years after that, when they return to Babylon. And so I think we tend to compress all that when we read about it, and we don't think of how long ago that was. I mean, there's a lot of things in Scripture where, for us, it'd be like going back before the revolution. And yet we read it and we think it's all kind of condensed in the same time frame, and it's not. Okay, so I just wanted to throw all that out. Okay, so let's start going through this. Fulfilled, these are predictions of Isaiah that were fulfilled. He made them before they happened, but they ended up happening during his lifetime. First of all, Judah was going to be delivered from Syria and Israel. So what happens here is Syria, not Assyria, not the one that eventually captured Israel, was Assyria, or conquered them. But before that, Syria and Israel were going to attack Judah. And Judah is in jeopardy of being overrun by both the northern kingdom of Israel and the Syrians, who had kind of merged together. And they got upset with Judah because the king of Assyria was threatening Syria and Israel. And so they wanted Judah to join forces. And Judah refused. So now Syria and Israel are going to go down and kind of attack Judah. But Isaiah is telling them, don't worry, God's going to protect you. Judah will be delivered from Syria and Israel, even though it doesn't look like that's going to happen. It looks like they're going to destroy you. Judah will be delivered. Okay, so that's one thing that Isaiah predicts, and that's in chapter 7, starting with verse 4. It says, say to him, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. Do not lose heart because of these two smoldering stubs of firewood. That's Israel and Syria, okay, that it's referring to. Because of the fierce anger of Rezin and Aram and the son of Remaliah. Aram, Ephraim. Now Aram was the king of Syria in Damascus. Ephraim is another word or term that is used for Israel or the northern tribes. Okay, they were the biggest tribe in the of the northern kingdoms, and so it's often referred to as Ephraim. So that's the same as saying Israel here, or the northern tribes, or whatever you want to call. And so it's mentioning Syria and Israel. Aram and Ephraim and Remaliah's son have plotted your ruin, that is Judah's ruin, saying, remember, Isaiah's a prophet to Judah, not to the northern tribes, although he does a lot of prophecies about the northern tribes. Let us, so the Syria and Israel said, let us invade Judah. Let us tear it apart and divide it among ourselves and make the son of Tabal king over it. Yet this is what the sovereign Lord says, Isaiah is telling now Judah this. It will not take place. It will not happen. For the head of Aram is Damascus. And the head of Damascus is only Rezin. Within 65 years, Ephraim will be shattered. Ephraim will be too shattered to be a people. That's when they get captured by Assyria, and they ended up assimilating. Right? They start intermarrying, and that's why the Samaritans. Samaria was the capital of the northern tribes of Israel, and the Samaritans were half breeds. Right? Half Jews, half other nations. Right? Because of all the intermixing that occurred after Assyria conquered Israel. That's what this is all referring to. Isaiah predicts that Judah would be delivered from this attack from King Aram of Syria and the king of Israel. And then if you look at verse 16, it tells you a little more. It says, it talks about a boy here, and of course the boy is really Christ. Okay, but he's got a double meaning here again. And it says, but before the boy knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right, and by in Jewish tradition, that's age 16. All right. The land of the two kings you dread will be laid to waste. Okay, so this kind of has a double meaning referring to Christ, but also a meaning of that time, and that those two kings that they were fearing. And their lands would be laid to waste. Any questions on that? Does that make sense? Okay, so that's one of his predictions. Oh, and I wanted to show you on the map, because you're going to see a lot of this stuff. We're going to be talking a lot of this. So you've got Israel here, right, and Egypt's down here, and there's various kingdoms surrounding Israel, and we've talked about a lot of them in our other studies. You've probably forgotten a lot of it, though. So Jerusalem is here. The southern tribes are kind of that pink area, that pink and green area here, and Jerusalem is there, and that's the capital of the southern tribes of Judah. Now, they were called Judah because Judah was the main tribe that was in the south. They talk about it being the two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. But actually, there were a lot of the remnants of Ephraim and Manasseh and other tribes, and a lot of the priests, all right, the tribes of Levite. Couldn't think of his name. I was going to say Aaron, but Aaron was descended from the Levite. But the tribe of the Levites, a lot of the priests, they didn't like what the north, because the northern tribes immediately tried to destroy any semblance of God. And they start setting up high places and started worshiping Baal and Asherah, the goddess Asherah, and all that. And so they were setting up high places and all that. And so a lot of the quote true believers who were living in the northern tribes became refugees and went down to the to Judah. So there were other tribes. We often talk about the two tribes, Judah and Benjamin, and then the other 10 are the lost tribes of Israel, all right? Well, they aren't totally lost. Parts of them, remnants of them, went down to Judah. And those who didn't did intermarry, most of them intermarried, and so kind of got absorbed into the general population of other nations in the north. That didn't happen in the south. They stayed more true to their Jewish heritage. So you've got Jerusalem here. The northern tribes are up here, and their headquarter was in Samaria. Okay, that's where their capital was. And then north of that, well, over here along the coast, you have Tyre, and we'll talk about Tyre, and he has a lot of prediction about Tyre. And that's part of Phoenicia. Who is from Phoenicia, who we recently studied? During our study of Elijah, who was from Phoenicia, and Tyre, and Sidon. To the two cities. Jezebel.
I know you don't believe me. I heard Jezebel on the tip of my tongue.
Jezebel and her father, and her father was named Ethbaal, so it has the term Baal in it. Like a lot of Israelites, they have the term God in their name, right? Jehovah. Yesu, Jesus. They all have, a lot of them are named with a name for God in their name, all right? So Elijah is an example. Yah, Elijah, Eliyah. Yah means God, okay? And so likewise, up here, both Jezebel and her father had Baal in their name because that was their God. And that became the God of Ahab then down here in Samaria, because he turned to their religion. Okay, so that's Phoenicia. We'll talk a little bit. Isaiah has some predictions about Phoenicia. The Philistines, of course, are over here in what's currently the Gaza Strip, and that was Philistia, and you know they were always a thorn in the side of the Israelites, including when David was there. David finally conquered the Philistines, and of course Goliath was a Philistine, and was with the Philistine army at least. And then across from the Dead Sea, Jerusalem's on the east side of the Dead Sea. On the west side of the Dead Sea was an area called Moab, and then down south of that was an area called Edom, and it was a lot bigger. Edom are all the descendants of Esau, Jacob's brother. Okay, Israelites are all the descendants of Jacob, but Edom is the descendants of his brother Esau, who was supposed to have the birthright, right? And he sold his birthright away to Jacob. So Jacob became the father of Israel, and Jacob's name was changed to Israel. Then it'll also talk about Arabia. And if you look at this bigger map, here's Israel and all that. This is more modern day. But Arabia is that whole peninsula down here, which is mostly today Saudi Arabia. I mean, there's Yemen and there's Qatar and there's some other countries in there too. But most of it's Saudi Arabia. That's called Arabia back in the time of Isaiah. Okay, that whole area was called Arabia. And that'll be mentioned as well. Isaiah will mention that too. Okay. So let's go to the second one. Syria and Israel are, we looked at in chapter 7 that Isaiah says that Syria and Israel, that Judah would be delivered from them, and that Syria and Israel and those kings would be destroyed. Well, now Isaiah gets more specific about that destruction, and he says that they will actually be destroyed by Assyria. In chapter 8, verse 4, where's verse 4 start? Why can't I find verse 4? Well, let me start with 3. I can't find where 4 starts. Then I went to the prophetess, and she conceived and gave birth to a son. All right, so there's a prophetess that lived during Isaiah's time, and she conceived and gave birth to a son. And the Lord said to me, name him Mehar Shalal Hashbosh. And before the boy knows how to say my father or my mother, so again, it's similar to that verse back in chapter 7, before the person was of age to make the decision between right and wrong, before now it's even younger, before he even knows how to say my mother or my father, the wealth of Damascus, now Damascus is the capital of Syria, not Assyria, Syria, okay? the wealth of Damascus and the plunder of Samaria. And Samaria is the capital of what?
Of Israel,
the northern tribes. They'll be carried off by the king of Assyria. Okay? And Syria, let's see, that's probably not sure real well. This, you kind of see Syria is over here, and Syria exists today, and Damascus is the capital of Syria today as well. And Assyria is, if you look here, this is Syria right in here with Damascus there and everything else. And kind of above it and west of it, there's an area, and that's Assyria. Okay? And so they end up conquering and coming down, conquering all of Syria, and they also come down and conquer all of Israel. And they take Israel captive, and that's in 722 BC. And it's not only in chapter 8, it's also in chapter 17. It talks about that. And if you look at chapter 17, that whole chapter, my Bible gives kind of a title to the chapter, and it says, An Oracle Against Damascus. And so that whole chapter 17, we won't go through the detail, but that whole chapter is about Syria, not Assyria, Syria, and how Syria is going to be destroyed by Assyria. Okay, Damascus is going to be destroyed. So this is an oracle against Damascus. And in verse 1 it says, See, Damascus will no longer be a city, but will become a heap of ruins. Because Assyria is going to come down and conquer Syria. And then down in verse 3, the fortified city will disappear from Ephraim. And Ephraim is what? What is Ephraim?
Israel.
That's the whole northern tribe. It's just another name they use for Israel, because Ephraim was the biggest of the tribes. Of those 10 tribes that were part of the northern kingdom, Ephraim was the biggest and had the most territory. So they often call Israel Ephraim, and Isaiah does that a lot. And the power will be taken away from Damascus. The remnant of Aram will be like the glory of the Israelites, declares the Lord Almighty. In that day, the glory of Jacob will fade. And so both Israel and Syria are going to be captured by the king of Assyria. And that whole chapter is dedicated to Isaiah's prediction of the destruction of Syria. And he references Ephraim and Israel as well in that. Now, Assyria, do you think Assyria, after they go conquer, you know, it kind of, there's Assyria on the map. It's kind of above that yellow and to the east, or the west of that yellow, or the east of that yellow, sorry. So north of the yellow and east of the yellow. And so they come down, and the yellow is kind of mostly Syria. So they come down and conquer Syria. And then they go over here and conquer the northern tribes of Israel. You think they're going to stop there? No, they're going to keep going. They're going to go conquer Judah. And their actual objective is to conquer Egypt. So the king of Assyria has now conquered Syria. He's conquered the northern tribes of Israel in 722, and now he's going to go take the southern tribes of Judah. And then he's going to go from there to take up Egypt. Okay, that's his plan. That's the king of Assyria. So what Isaiah predicts, you know, you're worried about Syria and Israel because we didn't join forces with them against Assyria, and so now Syria and Israel are going to come down and destroy us, but Judah will be delivered, he said. And they were. But then Assyria comes and destroys Syria and Israel. And now Assyria is now going to invade Judah as well and destroy some of the towns of Judah. And if you look at chapter 8, verses 7 and 8.
So the glory of Jacob is referring to
Israel.
To Israel.
I mean, Jacob's name was Israel. Yeah. God changed his name to Israel. So it's the same thing. So in verses 7 and 8. Of chapter 8, it says, Therefore the Lord is about to bring against them the mighty flood waters of the river, the king of Assyria, with all his pomp. It will overthrow all its channels, run over all its banks, and sweep on into Judah, swirling over it, passing through it, and reaching up to the neck. What do you think the neck? The neck is just before the what? The head. And the head is what? The capital. Jerusalem, all right? Passing through it and reaching up to the neck, Its outspread wings will cover the breadth of your land, O Emmanuel. So Isaiah says, you know, you guys worry about Syria and Israel. God's going to take care of them. But now the country God uses to conquer them is going to come down and invade you. That's what Isaiah is telling them. And by the way, all of this is because of their unfaithfulness and, you know, their turning, not being faithful to God and all that kind of thing. And remember, Isaiah, the king when Isaiah started prophecy was his cousin. His first cousin was king, right, when he started doing his prophecy. So he says that Assyria is now going to invade Judah. Assyria will also subjugate the Philistines. So the Philistines are just west of Israel, right? There's the southern tribes of Israel, and Philistia is just west of there. And so the Assyrians are going to come down, sweep through Syria, sweep through Israel. They're going to conquer Philistia, and they're going to invade Judah on their way to Egypt. Okay, it was the plan. So Isaiah talks about the Philistines also being subjugated in chapter 14, verses 28 through 32. We'll read those. Let's see. This oracle came in the year King Ahaz died. Now, the King Ahaz, you've got on your little sheet here, and King Ahaz, remember, he's ministering Judah, so Ahaz is a king of Judah, and King Ahaz died in 716 B.C., okay, that's when his reign stopped, and that's because he died then. So it's this. He's now specifically talking about 716 B.C., and this is before that he's writing this. So do not rejoice. So this oracle came in the year King Ahaz died in 716. Do not rejoice, all you Philistines, that the rod that struck you is broken. From the root of that snake will spring up a viper. Its fruit will be a darting, venomous serpent. The poorest of the poor will find pasture, and the needy will lie down in safety. But your root I will destroy by famine. It will slay your survivors. Right. So he's talking about Assyria. They are conquering the Philistines, and a lot of them starving to death, probably during sieges of the various towns, so they couldn't get any food in, that kind of thing. And then it says Moab is going to be plundered. Okay, and Moab is here. The southern tribe of Judah was on the west side of the Dead Sea. Moab was on the east side of the Dead Sea. And so it says Moab's going to be conquered as well. And so that's in chapters 15 and 16. We won't look at that. But again, my title above chapter 15 says a prophecy against Moab. And so the whole of chapter 15 and 16 is a prophecy against Moab. In verse 6 says, the waters of Nimrim are dried up and the grass is withered. The vegetation is gone and nothing green is left. Now, it's my belief that not only did the Assyrians do that to Moab and leave it barren, I think that is also referring to the end times and an atomic bomb. Okay, in verse 6. I think that's the description of an atomic bomb. Just wiping everything out, and what used to be green is now just barren, totally wiped out by an atomic bomb. So I think that refers to the end time as well. If you look at chapter, and you might say, well, why would you pull that out of a prophecy against Moab, which was all applicable to that time frame? Well, let me show you another verse. In chapter 16, verse 5, in love, a throne will be established. In faithfulness, a man will sit on it, one from the house of David, one who is judging, one who in judging seeks justice and speeds the cause of the righteous. Who's that referring to? Jesus. That's Jesus Christ. All right. So he's got mixed in to this prophecy against Moab in chapters 15 and 16. He has future events kind of salt and peppered in there as well. Okay. And that's why I think in chapter 15, that verse 6 refers to an atomic bomb. In verse 6 refers to an atomic bomb. In chapter 16, verse 5, it refers to Jesus Christ, as well as the current time that he was talking about. Okay, so now Moab's plundered. And Egypt and Ethiopia are also conquered by Assyria. If you look at chapter 20, verse 4, it says, let's see. Oh, well, let me start with 3. Then the Lord said, just as my servant Isaiah has gone stripped and barefoot for 3 years as a sign and a portent against Egypt and Cush, and Cush is Ethiopia. And, you know, well, you can't see it on this map, but Egypt is here, right, in northern Africa, and just south along the eastern coast of Africa is Ethiopia, okay, just south of Egypt. And so, and that's what Cush is referring to as Ethiopia. So it says, against Egypt and Cush, verse 4, so the king of Assyria will lead away stripped and barefoot, just like Isaiah, you know, acted that out. Now it's going to really happen to the Egyptians and the Cushites. And stripped and barefoot, the Egyptian captives and Cushite exiles, young and old, with buttocks bared to Egypt's shame. So now we've seen, okay, and I'm kind of holding this till the end. Assyria has conquered Syria, it's conquered northern Israel, it's conquered Moab, it's conquered Philistia, it's gone down, conquered Edom and or Egypt, and then Ethiopia down south of there. So the Assyrian Empire has just conquered all those countries. And I've kind of left out Judah here, right? It says, and Arabia is to be pillaged, is the next one. And Arabia is, you can see part of Saudi Arabia here, that whole peninsula, right, where all the Arab states are today. Iraq is kind of, Iraq's really more in Babylon. Arabia back then really didn't include that. That was really Babylon. But Saudi Arabia, Yemen, a lot of those countries, most of that peninsula is Saudi Arabia. It's a big country. And anyway, that was referred to as Arabia here in Isaiah. And so Arabia is to be pillaged. If you look at chapter 21, verses 13 through 16, it says, an oracle concerning Arabia. So he gives all these oracles about all these countries. You caravans of Dendonites. Now, Arabia, you know, they were all nomads, right? They had the camels, and they just set up tents, and they moved around, and so that's what this is referring to. Your caravans of Dendonites who camp in the thickets of Arabia, bring water for the thirsty. You who live in Tema, bring food for the fugitives. They flee from the sword, that's the sword of Assyria, from the drawn sword, from the bent bow, and from the heat of battle. And then verse 16, 17, this is what the Lord says to me, within 1 year, as a servant bound by contract would count it, all the pomp of Kedar will come to an end. The survivors of the bowmen, the warriors of Kedar, will be few. The Lord, the God of Israel, has spoken. And that's part of Kedar's part of Assyria, of Arabia. Okay, Tyre. And who is from Tyre? Remember I asked this earlier, who is from Tyre? Jezebel. All right. Now, Jezebel's long dead now, right? I mean, she's not still alive at this point. But anyway, it's her old country of Phoenicia. And now Isaiah says that Phoenicia is also going to be conquered by the Assyrians. And so it says Tyre's to be subdued. Tyre's just the capital of Assyria. So he's really, I mean, the capital of Phoenicia. So he's really saying Phoenicia will be conquered by the Assyrians. And so chapter 23 is a prophecy about Tyre, an oracle concerning Tyre. Wail, O ships of Tarshish, for Tyre is destroyed and left without house. Who else is from Tarshish? Tarsus, left from Tarsus. Jonah. And left without house or harbor from the land of Cyprus. Word has come to them. And Cyprus is an island, of course, just west of there. And it's also conquered then by the Assyrians. And so you can go on in chapter 23, and it reads all about Tyre and Phoenicia being conquered. And then finally, what happens to Judah? Everyone all around, everywhere gets conquered. And what happens with Judah? Next, Jerusalem is going to be delivered from Assyria. So Jerusalem and Judah get spared. And it's God's intervention that spares them. They didn't fight and win a battle against Assyria. God intervened and kept Assyria from conquering the southern tribes of Judah. Now, I think maybe we should wait till next week to do this. What I want to do now is go through that history. You know, why all those countries on every side, I mean, for miles and miles in every direction, have been conquered now by Assyria, and Judah's this little island in the middle that gets spared. Okay, and you know the king of Assyria wasn't kind-hearted and said, "Oh, I'm going to spare you, Judah." That's not what happened. And we're going to look at a little bit of this history. And you might want to add, I've got chapter 36 written there for Jerusalem to be delivered. You might add chapters 37 and 38 as well, and we'll look at those next. During this time, the king is Hezekiah. And Hezekiah, if you remember, Hezekiah was one of the good kings. And in fact, he was one of the best. There were two kings of Israel, of Judah. There were 20 kings of Judah. Eight of them were good. 12 of them weren't. Of the eight that were good, there were two that were very good. And those were Hezekiah and Josiah. Hezekiah lived during the time of Isaiah. Josiah lived right after Josiah started ruling Israel right after Isaiah died. And so Josiah was the real reviver of Israel. I mean, he really restored Israel. Even God says, "My kingdom is like it was under David." Josiah loves me as much as his father David did, with all his heart, mind, soul, and strength. And Josiah, therefore, was by far the best king in terms of being faithful to God of all the Judean kings. None of the Israelite kings were good. They were all against God. In Judah, eight of them were good out of the 20. This is during the time of Hezekiah, and there's a lot that goes on. Assyria's threatening. The Dorset, remember it said, up to the neck. He got up to the neck of Judah, Assyria did, which means he's on the doorstep of Jerusalem is what that means. Jerusalem would be the head, the capital of Judah. So he did plunder a number of the cities in Judah north of Jerusalem. But when he got to Jerusalem, we're going to see how God actually delivers Jerusalem from the hands of the Assyrian king, and the Assyrian king retreats. But it doesn't stop him. He goes on, conquers all those other countries, but he just never comes back to Judah. At one point, Hezekiah was then going to be killed because Hezekiah kind of got proud and fell away from God. He didn't really fall away. He still was faithful to God, but he became very proud. So God was going to kill him. God was going to take it, end his life, I guess is a better way to say it. Hezekiah humbles himself, totally humbles himself, and prays to God and asks to be spared. And after Isaiah predicts that he's going to be taken by God, after Hezekiah prayers, Isaiah comes back to him and says, God has relented and is going to give you an extra 15 years. And so he got 15 more years as a king in his life before God then took him because he humbled himself. And all during this time, God's protecting Judah from Assyria, who is now conquered, right? Everything, all the way around here, everything's conquered except for Judah. It's all part of the Assyrian Empire now, except for Judah. And that's what Isaiah predicted, all of that all before any of it happened. Isaiah predicted that was going to happen. Remember, this is still back in the time Isaiah's writing this, when Syria and Israel are threatening Judah before Assyria starts coming down and wiping them all out. Okay, so this is well ahead of that time. And then Assyria comes and conquers them all, and in 722 actually conquers the northern tribes and then goes on to conquer all those other countries all the way around, all over the place. But he spares Judah because of God's intervention. And we'll look at that then next week. Okay, so is this all confusing, or is it at least making some sense?
Fascinating, but it's certainly hard to keep up with
it all. Yeah. Well,
where is Mesopotamia? Why is that a word that I hear it from time to time, but I don't.
I don't know if I have it on. I don't
is
think.
This,
yeah, Mesopotamia. How can I show that? I don't think I can show it on this at all. No, I don't think I have another map. Okay, but let's look at this map. Here's Israel. Okay, now. forget this part, right? Let's just look at this map. This is the land of Israel, Mediterranean Sea, all that. And way over here is Iraq, and then Iran, okay? And Iraq is, modern-day Iraq, is in the territory of Babylon, okay? And it's the Babylonians, which is, it's 500 miles from Jerusalem to Babylon, okay? So Babylon is over here, and it's kind of sandwiched between the Euphrates and the Tigris rivers. You've probably heard about those in scripture. The Euphrates and the Tigris, okay? Back in the time of Abraham and before, Abraham came from where? And remember?
It's in my head.
Okay, there's two terms that really are the same as Babylon. Ur of the Chaldees. Chaldeans are Babylonians. Ur is in Babylon. It was just before it was called Babylon. Okay. Now, Tower of Babel was in Babylon. All right. All of that's taken place in Mesopotamia. Okay. So the Tower of Babel, Ur of the Chaldees,
where the Garden of
Abraham. A lot of people think the Garden of Eden was there too. Yeah, in between the Euphrates and the Tigris.
Is there anything in Genesis that says he will scatter their languages?
Yeah. That's the Tower of Babel. And that's all in Babylon, and that's part of Mesopotamia. So Abraham came from Mesopotamia to the Promised Land in Israel, okay? So Mesopotamia is that whole area kind of in the area of Babylon, which is kind of modern-day Iran and Iraq, okay? It's called Ur, it's called Chaldea, it's called Babylon, it's called Mesopotamia. All of those are... They aren't exactly the same. Mesopotamia is a bigger term that really encompasses a bigger geographic area than just Babylon. But in general, it's that same area. Okay, does that help? Okay, well, we'll just go ahead and close then and let you go.
Okay.
And then we'll pick that up there. Does that sound good? You want to hear about Hezekiah and all that? Okay.
It's interesting. It's just hard to...